Hi, welcome to What Matters with Dr. Kynes. I'm your host, Kasia Kynes, Doctor of Clinical Nutrition. I'm a global leader in Epstein-Barr virus methodology for recovery, CEO and founder of Global EBV Institute. I'm a writer, I'm a lecturer, and I am an expert on wellness. But today I'm your host, and the reason why I created What Matters is because I think we live in a fear-based information age. But what happens is that we are spiritual beings. We're having a physical experience. And we need more healing and more understanding of the possibilities that the healing is at our fingertips in all kinds of modalities. So in my life, I've been very fortunate to meet amazing light workers. Light workers to me are people that are facilitating the healing, teaching us about the gifts of it, and bringing us hope to make our planet a better place. And boy, do we need that. Do we need that sparkle? Do we need that love? So I feel responsible to bring these amazing people to us and share their wisdom, what they want to tell us about the love, the possibility of healing, and how we can make this planet better for us, our children, and our animals. And today is very special. Today, my guest is Liz Schuster, a very dear friend of mine. We go way back when, and she is actually the inspiration behind What Matters with Dr. Kynes. Because of her, I kept thinking, how can we bring these amazing people like her to our communities so they can speak and they can share, and we can all get a little bit of that love and healing, the possibility of it as well. So let me welcome Lynn Schuster. Hello, Lynn.
Hi, Kasia. It's so great to be here. This is so exciting.
My pleasure. I am totally tickled to death. So let me read you guys a little bio of where Lynn is coming from. Lynn Schuster is a leading animal communication expert and teacher. She's the founder and CEO of Animal Spirit Talker. We call her Animal Spirit Talker. As a telepathic animal communicator, Lynn has the ability to hear what the animals have to say, and she's able to help strengthen the bond and the bond relationships between animals and their human families. Through meditative process, she hears and senses what the animals have to say. She helps people to connect with the animals, encouraging love and healing for both the animals and their human families. But I actually have a little bit more to say, because she's also an artist. She's a Reiki master, and she teaches people, and I want to take her class, how to communicate with animals better. And I try different things that she teaches me here and there, but I want to take her class. She's a visionary and a mediator. She inspires people to see, feel, and believe that they can indeed communicate with their animals, guides, and even angels. She's passionate about helping all species, both animal and human, to transform themselves or their situations into what they dream they could be. There's a lot and lot and lot I can tell you about Lynn. I love what she says when she says she's championing for the animals. Mm-hmm. The animals have a lot to tell us, and I've been her student too. Our animals are here to remind us that we can love unconditionally. We are here together to help each other heal the fear that is blocking us from realizing our true selves. Let me see, I got lost here. Yes, through the animals, we can find our spirits and our passion. We can release the fear that is blocking us from going within and looking deeper. Through our relationships with our animals, we are able to open our hearts and feel the love of the divine, transmuting all that no longer serves us and the highest good of all. She's the most compassionate lady that I know. I love her dearly, and I am proud to call myself her friend. So welcome, 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 Lynn. Finally, we get you here.
Thank you.
Thank you for inspiring me. So we're having our tea. What you drinking?
So I've got my ginger and lemon. I use the fresh ginger and infuse that in my water, and then squeeze some fresh lemon juice in there. And sometimes I treat myself to a little honey.
Little honey, great for immune system. Exactly. That sounds delicious. I have my favorite Earl Grey, fair trade, loose tea with a squirt of lemon. So that's my little perk me up. I love that. So we're recording it in early May, when 2020, when we are still in quarantine. So maybe we should touch up on this and what challenges you see when you're working with animals right now and their human companions.
Right.
Yeah. I've been sharing a lot, but yeah, let's maybe make it a little relevant for where we are as we're recording it.
Okay. Very good. I've been actually doing a lot of Reiki with the animals and with the humans. A lot of Reiki sessions just to relax, bring everybody into a relaxed state. A lot of the animals are the domestic animals, because I've been talking to the wild animals. They keep showing up in my yard or on walks or in my sessions with other humans and animals. So I've been extra busy talking to all kinds of animals that are showing up. The domestics, a lot of our domestic animals are feeling their humans' fear, and they can't figure out why they're home so much, and they can feel like the boredom and the, you know, trying to figure out how to live life, mm-hmm. you know, when maybe they're not working or, you know, everybody's at home now. And the kids are home when they're supposed to be in school. So a lot of the animals are feeling like they're not exactly sure what their jobs are, mm. or that they're overworked. Mm. Some are taking on, some of the animals are actually taking on health issues, which I'm trying to let them know they don't have to take on their humans' health issues. So some of them are more lethargic, or there's actually been a few of the animals, a few more deaths of animals that the vets don't know exactly what the reasoning is. They don't have, you know, a diagnosis for why they're sick or you know, what's happening. So my clients, my human clients have been calling me to discuss these matters with their animals and help them. That's why I've been doing a lot of Reiki, to help them release and just feel gentle and feel, you know, the gentle energy, the loving energy, and reminding everybody, both animals and humans, that when we hold the space of love, it raises our vibration, and fear and love cannot be in the same place at the same time. So I've been also sharing a lot of a love meditation with my humans that they can do with their animals, about bringing in love. And if we have time later on at the end, I can do that with everybody.
Thank you for the offer. Mm-hmm. I love how you call us animal companions and human companions. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I really hate the word pets. Mm-hmm. I really do, because it takes the individuality and the human aspect, like the being aspect of it. A pet is a toy. And so that's just endearing that, you know, you bring that awareness just
talking about this one. Yeah, they are my companions. Actually, you can't see on my loom bench, my very expensive cat perch, which is also...
You can see her weaving a station. Beautiful loom, yes.
But both of my cats are here next to me. I'll just kind of give a little turn there.
There they are.
And there's... I can't tell which one.
I can see.
There's Haley. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which they usually don't sit that close together. They are okay with each other, but afternoons sometimes they get a little, bored, and they chase each other around and actually kind of fight. So the animal communicator has animal problems in her own house.
Like, you know, you can have a therapist who has three kids at home, and sometimes it happens with a therapist, a kids therapist who has three kids. Life happens to everyone. So this is a question actually that I want to ask you, since we're talking about the COVID-19. Like, if I'm sitting with my cat And the cat is a little anxious and snappy just because we're fearful and we're talking to, you know, the spouse and we're watching the news and every night and all that. Now the animal companion doesn't quite understand. So there's a kitty saying, is there a way for me to kind of focus and look at them or think about them and say, we have this illness that is going around. It's not here, but that's why we worry. So they have how do we communicate that to them? So they say, okay, I get it. That's why you're home. There's a joke going around. The dogs think that you quit your job to finally be home and play with them. And the cats think that they always knew you were a loser. You lost your job.
I've seen that. Well, I ask my cats right away, you don't think I'm a loser, right?
It's a human joke, I believe. Let's talk about it. You know, if you're sitting with a dog and with a kitty and with a dog, how do you bring that thought and somehow send it? And how do you know that they heard it? Because that's the most difficult thing for people to understand. And sometimes you tell me, yes, you told Charlie, this is our kitty, and he heard you. Yeah, he got the message. But I thought it was in my head because it was so subtle, I wasn't sure. So it's like a very different realm and people don't know it. That's why I'm so excited to share your wisdom here. What do we do right now with this COVID to kind of make them a little bit more at ease so they have a frame? It's like, oh, I get it. I understand what you're saying.
So the best thing that we can do is feel at peace ourselves and feel love. And the easiest way for me to bring myself into that peaceful place, because I'm just like everybody else, kind of, when we have fear, that's the first thing we do is we go, and we hold our breaths.
Yes.
So when I'm connecting with the animals, exactly, feeling the breath is the most important aspect and gift that we have, no matter what, whether we're trying to communicate with the animals, each other, ourselves, our breath is the most important thing that we have. So feeling deep belly breathing, mostly we breathe what I call by default. We are we're breathing because that's our God-given gift. We don't even have to pay attention to it. We just breathe. But when we're mindfully breathing, I'm aware that I'm breathing, and I'm bringing that breath all the way down to my belly. So feeling my belly rise and fall. And I can breathe through my nose or my mouth, and also I close my eyes. When I'm talking to the animals, I usually close my eyes. So I'm bringing myself into a place of peacefulness. And what I do is I imagine the animal's photograph in my mind's eye. So I'm imagining right now, I'm imagining my cat Haley, who's sitting on my loom bench, looking out the window. And she helps me in my classes. So I'm imagining her, and I just stated my intention is to speak with Haley. And when I see her animated or moving in my mind's eye from that photograph of her, I know I have a connection. So right now I'm seeing her jumping off the loom bench. She's not really jumping off the loom bench, but I know I have a connection with her. And I'll either hear her voice. And usually with Haley, I hear her voice. Their voices sound like children, playful children. And it's in a little different space in my mind than my usual mind chatter. It's always gentle and childlike. So right now she just showed me a picture of her batting her tail. She's like, the animals also think I talk too much. And I just told her while I'm talking to you, which I find amazing that I can talk to her and you at the same time sometimes. I just told her we're in a teaching moment right now and that I have her on hold and that I'm using her her energy and her good nature to help me explain. And so she said, oh, okay. And she just looked at me. my cat officer just said, so what about me? Okay, there is you too. So I told him, whatever you do, don't get in a fight with Haley right now. So back to how we do this. Imagination, besides the breath, it's the imagination. Our imagination is everything. Our imagination, besides our breath, is another most important tool. Our imagination is real. Everything begins in the imagination. Every creative idea, every idea begins in the imagination. It can be a fear-based or a love-based, but everything. People who, say, design furniture, in their imagination, they see that table and how they might want it to look and what kind of wood they might use. And then it comes out, they go and purchase that wood and they create the table, however they do their woodworking, and there's the table. It comes out from the mind out into the physical world. So our imagination is real.
I think it's important what you say, because we live in this information physicality based reality. This is all that surrounds us, and we don't have space and time to even consider that there is that intuition, imagination, creativity, the thought. That's our connection to the divine. That's who we are, that we have the spark. Mm-hmm. And I think the animals have that reconnection to us if we let them. And what people don't know that I will share, if you don't mind, is when we've consulted with Lynn so many times, we always come back to Lynn whenever we move, whenever, you know, Charlie has to go to the vet and so on and so forth. So they know what's happening, that they're not anxious. But what strikes me each time when Lynn, you start the session, is when you know, okay, the heart is open. The opening of the heart is okay, the connection is established. That's how you do it. So the heart is all connected. That's the beauty of it. And yeah. So the breathing is free. We all have it. So hopefully when Lynn was walking us through it, you guys were breathing. I was.
I am, yeah.
Uh-huh. It's a reminder, because we are breathing shallow here when we are stressed, holding our chest. Exactly. Mm-hmm. We have to expand. And that kind of brings it to even cellular level. The cells inside us, they can contract when they are in fear. They're not taking nutrients in, they don't grow. Or they can expand when they're growing, when they're happy. Just like you said, if you are in one state, you cannot be in the other. If you are in joy, you cannot be in that stress response. They're exclusive, mutually exclusive. So whatever we can do to find that joy is what we want. And with the animals, well, what happens when your kitty jumps on your chest with purring? Mm-hmm. That's where the heart can open. You can let go, take a deep breath, connect, and get into that joy, because that's a magical moment right there. That's mm-hmm. the joy. Mm-hmm. All right, so people are anxious and animals don't know why. So our responsibility is to somehow communicate mm-hmm. that we're okay.
We're right. Mm-hmm. And when we feel that love pouring through our hearts, the animals relax, because they can feel that. We have four metaphysical senses. And I don't have my notes with me, so then it's okay. So I call them the clairs: clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience, and the other clair that I can never remember the name of unless I have my notes in front of me. But I do know what they do. So clear seeing, clairvoyance, clear hearing, clairaudience, clear sensing or feeling is clairaudience, clairvoyance, clairsentience, clear sensing, and then clear feeling. So I can either see pictures in my mind's eye, hear their voices, feel my heart opening or feel the fear. A lot, I'll feel the animals, how they're feeling. I'll ask.
I see.
To feel their feelings in my body. Uh-huh. So a lot of times when an animal, it has fear, all of a sudden I have a hard time breathing.
Ah.
And I have to go back to my deep belly breathing. I can feel my heart tightening up. And so I know they have fear. And so we talk to them about the fear, and I tell them, first thing that I do with the animals is let them know who I am and why I'm there, and that everything is okay, and we're going to be right here in this moment. So that's what you can tell your animals also. We're right here in this moment. As I'm looking around and feeling in my heart in this moment, I am experiencing joy. I love talking to you, Kasha, and I feel my heart opening because my two kitties are sitting next to me. And quite honestly, they don't sit that close to each other very often, and they know that this is what we're doing. And they both stood up. They're now resting again, but they both stood up and were at attention when I was talking to them and telling about how I connect with them. And as soon as we started a different vein of the conversation, they both are relaxing and waiting to see if I need them. But there, to me, was a very physical acknowledgement that I was definitely having a conversation with them. They were both much more animated and looking. An officer who has his back to me, they both do right now, but officer turned around and he was looking at me while I was communicating. That is
so important, because I think sometimes we live side by side, our animal companions, not really fully understanding that they are actually right there with us.
Mm-hmm.
They have a conversation. They're watching, they're listening, they're so close. They're so in tuned because, like you said, they have a job, and their job oftentimes is to, I don't know, protect you, love you, show you that love, open that heart. They have a job. They literally have a serious job, and they feel they have a job. That's why you were saying they're confused now what their job is, right?
I don't think we
actually know that, most of us. We don't know that. And when you do that exercise and you have that intention and you start noticing, you may notice that he actually raised his head and turned around and looked at me. Was it in my head, or did he actually hear my thoughts? It actually is happening. I'm going to tell a story. The recent one, when Lynn and I was on the call, we're trying to have a virtuality sometimes. And so I ran with my laptop to the spare bedroom. Charlie is taking a nap. And Charlie loves Lynn. He invites her himself without, you know, he just talks to her just because he wants to. And so I said, Charlie, look. Lynn is here, say hello. And he's sleeping, he's like, yeah, what? So he looks at the YouTube video, because I just put it right there, to say hello. He looks there, and Lynn is laughing, and he has this look on his face, like, oh no. And Lynn says, remember what the message was?
I don't.
Don't tell me I have to go to the vet again.
Oh yeah.
What's going on? I was like, no. So Lynn is laughing and saying, you know, he thinks there's something that is going to happen again. That's why we're talking. That's why we're talking, Lynn and I and Charlie. He's like, no, we're just talking today, Charlie. You're not going to no dentist. Nothing is happening. And literally when Lynn explained that, he was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the body language. You can see the energy shift. It's like, oh. I was worried.
I know. I really do remember that conversation. I love talking to Charlie. He's got a great sense of humor, and he's very aware, most animals are very aware.
Well, I want people to realize that there is this love affair that we haven't tapped into, that you know you love, you know you blink at your animal, you love the animal. They have a language, and they're right there, and that channel is open if we can just understand that it's there. Like you said, just the intention and the focus and the breath,
right.
They can tap right in there. I want to share another story, a plain story. So I'll start and you'll finish. We have a parrot, we have a small parrot, and we have Charlie. And so we were moving across the country. And we were literally leaving the empty house behind. Everything was already gone. It was completely empty. We were not going back, getting into the cab, going to the airport, and flying across the country with two animals. They've never done that. And so I was so busy cleaning up the last pieces of property as we were putting our backpacks together and walking out. I forgot to call Lynn because we had an appointment set, so she would remind the animals that we were going to fly and walk them through it again, because they only remember 2-3 nights, right? They don't remember months and weeks. Right.
Right.
So keep it in mind that you have to refresh it. And so I forgot, it's hectic. We put them in the carriers, into the cab we go. And before we sit down in the cab, Charlie had peed in the carrier. He's going to be in this carrier all day on the plane. It's like, oh no, what happened? I forgot to warn him. And so I think Lynn, you said he just lost it. He forgot. He just got stressed out. And that's what happened. But so I was so sorry. Now this is the distinction. This is the biggest difference in your life, in your experience as a human, that you will have when you understand this. I was not mad at him. I was sorry that I failed. I was sorry I forgot to talk to him. I was sorry he got upset and scared because we're in a rush. And we kind of, don't talk to them because we're in our world. And they don't know. And so you have much more compassion and understanding instead of thinking he has a behavior problem and I need to euthanize him or give him away. It's a big issue, such a big issue. It's heartbreaking when I see that. So poor thing is in his, he's like, okay. We come to the airport, we sit there, we have 30 minutes. Like, okay, I need to get on the call. Lynn, are you there? Yes, let's talk. So I'm sitting there at the gate talking to Lynn. Lynn was able to map out, and Lynn has a gift of explaining the animal experience in human language to us, and then relaying what we say in a way that the animals understand. It's just magical. So she was explaining there will be a lot of feet. You will sit down, you'll be under under on the floor. There will be a lot of feet going, but they will settle. And then there's going to be so much time explaining the time in their terms. So, and I remember you asking Charlie, do you think you will need to go to the bathroom? Mm-hmm. And you can hold it. I can hold it.
Yep,
and they knew they would be sitting next to each other under the seats. They knew our seats would be right there. Our feet would be right there. And you told them it would be like a long nap. And then you're going to be a new home and so on and so forth. And I could not believe it. There was not a squawk. There was not a meow. There was not a growling or anything. There was no complaining. Charlie was not scratching. I can't believe he did not scratch at his carrier at all. He just went to sleep. And our parrot also, Serengeti, was just quiet, wasn't chewing on the carrier either. They just went to sleep. They knew exactly what was happening. And I remember you talked to Serengeti and said, we will be on the plane. And he said, oh, I can fly there too.
Yeah. And
not as high. You can't fly that high. We're going to go higher. And another thing, I remember they have memory. I remember when I was going to a conference, it was like a week conference or 7-10 days. And so you were telling him that I'll be gone so he doesn't worry, which is important, you guys. If you have to travel, tell them. And his only concern was, do I have to fly?
Yeah, he didn't want to do that.
Better her than me. That's what you said, right? Better her than me. I don't need to go. Good. I'm happy. So I remember we were in the middle of the flight.
Mm-hmm.
Told me that later.
Mm-hmm.
And you're eating dinner with your husband. You want to tell that story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was eating dinner. I was just minding my own business. And I heard Charlie say, what was that? And I said, oh, just a little turbulence. That was just, I don't know how I knew. I just knew that there was turbulence. And So I said, don't worry, it's just a little turbulence, the little air pocket that, you know, wind, and it made the plane go bump, bump. And it's fine. You just have to, you can just go back and listen to the rumbling of the engine and allow that to ground you and put you back to sleep. And you'll be there. And I knew when you left, so I could let him know about how long your flight was, you know, how much farther he had to go, how many, you know, much more time for his nap. So yeah, but it was pretty funny. I just kept eating. I don't even know if I told my husband, oh yeah, a cat just talked to me while I was eating.
Yes. And the only thing I remember is that he said, okay.
Signing off. That's what he said. Okay.
Signing off. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is there was a little moth flying here, as you can see.
I saw him.
Uh-huh. Hey, I've never had a moth sit in front of me on, they're not like that. It's sitting right there in front of me with his little antennas moving. Mm-hmm. He's not flying out. He just landed there and he's been sitting there.
Mm-hmm. He probably wants us to know what he thinks about what's happening in the world, because the wild animals have been coming to me and telling me what their thoughts are, that we shouldn't be afraid. And so I'd be interesting to see what Moth has to say. And I take it, they show up at opportune times. So now I'll have to put Moth on my, list of animals. I see him. He's pretty, yeah, it looks like he a little white mate.
He actually walked around. So he was facing me standing and then he took off. Like, that has never happened to me. Mm-hmm. He's a little fellow. So it's interesting because I really want our listeners and viewers to understand that they are so involved in us. I remember when I was writing the book, Charlie was really always like, I was, you know, on my laptop on bed, I had all these notes, and he would be sitting there, like sitting there on the left and holding his paw here and like holding it on my notes. And I didn't make anything out of it until Lynn, of course, told me, well, he said he was putting his finishing touches. He was like, he was managing this process. It was very important. The book was very important. He was very pleased and proud. It's like, how would he know, right? Well, they're right there with us.
Right there. Uh-huh. All the animals, both domestic and wild, talk to each other telepathically. The human species, we are the only ones who don't. We did when we were born. We're born to be able to do that, but we forget. And we're taught to use our words, to use a different kind of language, mm-hmm. to communicate. And so it's like a muscle that we're not using. You know, if I'm not exercising my muscles, they don't have the strength that they do when they're all in tune.
That's true.
And so for me, it's like exercising this muscle every day to really be able to, and to know from experience that I'm talking to them.
So that's why you're able to teach people like me. You can have classes and teach communication. Yeah. Because it's just that muscle that we have to
use. Right. We all have it. We all have those metaphysical senses, same as our physical senses. Most of us, mm-hmm. You know, we have our eyes, our ears, our nose, you know, so hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, those are physical senses. Our metaphysical are clear seeing, clear hearing, clear feeling, clear sensing. Uh-huh. And so we all have those. And so it's a matter of determining how do I communicate, what is my main way. So mainly I see pictures and I hear their voices, then I'll feel their feelings, and lastly I sense and have a sense of knowing that something is true. So I work with everybody to figure that out. How do you communicate? What language are you using?
And the gift is that when you are in that space, starting a conversation, let's say with Charlie or Serengeti, there is a peacefulness and love, and it feels like I really am in a different space. And then when you start, and there's hummingbird that is coming to say hello as well, right there outside the window. Everybody loves you. They just want to come and take part, right? And the way you explain the reality for both sides, you know, it's just beautiful and very healing, because you have that heart open, you have all that love. And so that's a very healing space. And I can't stress it enough, if for anyone watching us right now, if you have animal companion, I don't know what I would have done in all the complicated situations and life changes, dragging our animals into these situations without Lynn, if I didn't know she had my back. So for example, when we were flying, this was the first time for the poor parrot to be on the plane. Well, Charlie too, but parrots are so much more fragile, I would think.
Yeah.
And then my husband was so anxious about it. And so we were talking to Sarangeti, and you were saying, he agreed to be compliant, because my husband thought that they would open the cage, he would fly at the airport, and it would be a disaster, and what is going to happen? I'm going to lose him, and he's going to break his wings, and oh my gosh. So they took us to a private room, then they opened the cage, they opened the carriers, and literally Sarangeti went on his best behavior. He was on his shoulder. He didn't go anywhere. He was trying to laugh. Like, he was trying to nibble on his ear and laugh. And then later, when we talk about it, he told you that he was trying to make him laugh, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And just
relax. It's okay.
Relax, yes, and so we had such a peaceful transition. I mean, we were flying from Baltimore to Seattle. And then after that, we had to, you had to get the luggage and then drive. And then we slept on the floor in our new house. There was no furniture, just the blanket from a friend. So I can imagine a lot more behavioral problems, chewing, like self-chewing, urination, pooping, aggression, hissing. I mean, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine easily. Without having somebody like you, we always work with Lynn, and I encourage you to find somebody, or we're going to put links to Lynn so you can find her, because you've been doing it for a long time. They are such part of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this conversation hopefully will change the way you look at them, and you can talk closer to them. So tell me more about some funniest or most surprising or most amazing events you had in your communications between our species.
Yeah, well, it's so funny because my horse Boo just came in too.
I
visited him physically today, but he's been with me for 7 or 8 years now. And I actually he was gifted to me by my animal communication teacher when she could no longer have him, because she had cystic fibrosis and she couldn't get into the barn, and so she wanted him to have more companionship. But when we went to get my sister and I went to get him, he was in southern Wisconsin, and we're in Door County, Wisconsin, so it's about a four-hour trip with the truck and the trailer, and we're driving home, and he was so good. I was talking to him, and my teacher was talking to him, and she asked him if he wanted to come with me, and he did. And he understood that she wasn't abandoning him, that she wanted him to have a better life, that with somebody that, you know, could get in the barn with him and be with him. Mm-hmm. And when we were coming into Sturgeon Bay, we were really close. We were only about 15 miles from home. And it was the beginning of July, I remember. It was kind of a warm day. But I said to him, whenever I drive into Sturgeon Bay from going on a trip, I think, oh, good, I'm home. Mm-hmm. And he heard me say it. Oh, good. We're home. And he said, and I saw him in my mind's eye looking around. I could also look in the rearview mirror and see, because I could see his head and through the little window in the trailer. But I saw, and I did see him looking around, and I heard him say, "It's so green here." Because
Ah.
all the grasses were really tall and very green. We had quite a bit of rain, and so everything was really green, lush, and tall compared to southern Wisconsin where he came from. But his tone of voice, it just I and I think of that sometimes. That was like one of the first things where we first started to get to know each other, was, "It's so green here."
It's like humans having conversations and opinions. Animals have opinions and likes and dislikes, right?
He was very excited that this was going to be okay. It was going to be okay. And I know he felt comfortable, because my sister, I had my sister go with me. He lives at my sister's house, and she's very knowledgeable about how, taking care of horses and transporting, and so she was very good to him too. Talking to him, physically talking to him, and getting him some water when we stopped at the gas station. So it was just a real easy. And speaking of traveling, I guess that's why he came in to say, his experience about traveling was because we all there. He had so much support, and he was leaving his home and leaving his other two horses in the herd. And so that could be very traumatic. But when he said how he noticed the grass, he there was just pure excitement and childlike, a real childlike sensation. And it really it made me it eased my worry also, because he's my first horse. I've never had I before him I didn't I liked horses, and I had been around horses, but I always went home then,
Different, yes. He's a beautiful horse. He's a beautiful. I meet him in person one day. He's a gorgeous horse. So I know. Remember, you told a story to me once about a horse that refused to go to a fair, just wouldn't get out of the trailer. And you talked to him, and he actually was afraid he would be abandoned. But when he explained to him that they were actually showing him off, he got it. He effortlessly got out and he shined and he won a reward or one of the two rewards. She was shining for the family. She was excited because he was scared he would be a dumbo. He had been hurt. Just like she was.
He had been living at that farm for about a year, and he loved living at that farm. And he trailered just fine to get to the farm. He walked right on and walked right off, and the ride was fine. But when they brought him out to get on the trailer, what they wanted to do was it was the woman's daughter's horse. And gonna take them to the fair to show them off in the halter class. It would be their first, both the daughter and this horse. It would be their first time. His name is Mike. Mike the horse.
It was a big deal, but there's this disconnect. So the humans were not aware that the horse didn't know,
Yeah,
couldn't
they
get their
couldn't
mind.
figure out. They could not figure out why he wouldn't get on the trailer, and it was very. Oh, everybody was distraught. Oh, that was they were she called, and she was just having just a real time of it. He was all sweaty, and Mike was all sweaty and kind of foamy. He just had so much fear, and she was all sweaty, and she just didn't want him to be afraid, and she couldn't figure out why he wouldn't get on the trailer. And so I talked to him, and he said he was afraid that he had done something wrong, and they were taking him back to his old farm. And I
He was
said,
afraid he had done something wrong. He
he
wouldn't
had
be
done
on the
something
trailer.
wrong, and they didn't. He couldn't figure out what he did wrong, and they were going to take him back to his other farm. Again, he was afraid he didn't do his job, and that they were letting him go. They were firing him. And so I said, oh, no, no, to the contrary, that's not it at all. They love you so much, they want to show you off. They want to take, so I imagined as I was telling him, in my mind, telling him in my thoughts, I was imagining a picture in my mind's eye about getting into the trailer, walking in, and I told him, I will walk on with you. Now, this horse was about a 2-hour drive from me, so I'm at my house and he's at his house. So it was all through our imagination, in my mind's eye, telepathically. And so I imagined that I was on the trailer with him and petting him, and his lady and girl were in the truck, and they were going to be careful and drive him. And we went around the country block once, and we came home, and he got off and went in his stall and had his dinner. And then we did that again. We did it a few times, so that he would know that he's getting off the trailer, he's going in his stall, and he's having his dinner. And the fourth time, we took a little bit longer trip. I had him imagine, where's the fairgrounds? I told him, I don't know exactly the trip that you're taking, but it's longer than what we've been practicing, that you're going to the fair. She's gonna, and I imagined her walking him around in the halter class. Then he's getting back on the trailer. He's going home and he's having dinner that same night. He's not staying overnight at the fairgrounds. He's going home that same night. The next morning she called me. He walked right straight on that trailer with no trepidation, no fear, right straight on. They got to the fair. Now Mike knew what he was doing in the fair. And so she led him around in the halter class, and they actually placed. They got a ribbon. So their very first time, they got a ribbon, and they beat. There was a couple other horses that had been there before who had won ribbons in the past, and the girl and Mike beat a couple. You know, at least one of those. The other one placed. I don't really remember, but Mike came home with a ribbon to hang in his stall. And after that, he just gets right on the trailer. He knows he's home. He knows his people love him. I helped him. The next time I helped him was when another horse came to join the herd, and he was worried that, oh, I must have done something wrong. They're needing to bring somebody in to replace me. So I helped him with that also. And they ended up getting along very well and eased the new horse into the herd real easily. And it's always good when everybody knows what's happening.
Now, this is what I want to drive home to everyone is, it's so much more like humans when we... somebody says something negative and we think we did something wrong, but in their case it's worse because they think we're disposing of them and letting them go. Mm-hmm. And they blame it on themselves. They don't know what it was and what they did, but they assume they've done something wrong. There's going to be disposed of. So if you ever have problems, behavioral problems with the animals, you know, track it back to why could they be like this? If they were humans, how would you handle it differently? What would you think about? Do you need a consult? Do you need to jump on with somebody like Lynn to help you troubleshoot? Because, I mean, in the worst case scenarios, the animals are put in shelter and then euthanized, literally, because they're pooping outside of the litter or because they hate the litter. The litter is not appropriate. Sometimes I think, what did the human think putting this litter in this way? I mean, this is not for cats. Whoever designed this, you know, we don't know. We think that this is perfect, but we don't ask. And sometimes certain litter hurts them, especially if they have, they're declawed, which please don't do it. Please, please don't. But if it's done, they have arthritis. They have pain in their hands, their paws. And that sand, that litter hurts them. So they may be doing it outside. Like, I had a cat until he died. I didn't know. It was only later, years later, that I realized the reason he would go to an empty bathtub, that would be the only place he would go, is because it didn't hurt him. There was no sound, there was nothing, so he pooped there. And the litter box was associated with pain. So, you know, it's like just being aware that the animals have feelings and fears. They are so part of us. They are so afraid. We want to let them go for some reason. Like if something is going on, just think about that and see if you can resolve it and open that heart. I think that would help a lot of animals. And because we're more hard. Mm-hmm.
And in turn, when we help the animals, it shows us how to, as humans, it shows us how to open our hearts and really feel the love. There's a lot, I know for me, before I started really working with the animals, I thought I knew how to love. But once I started talking to the animals and experienced that my heart opening so fully, that tears start coming down. And I know there's so much love flowing through my heart that it has to come out of my body some way in the form of tears.
Yeah, I remember sometimes you say that, okay, the heart is open, tears in my eyes. Yeah.
Tearing up, and I think the best part of my job is feeling that heart opening and knowing that the animals and the humans are experiencing that, because the animals mostly are here, their jobs mainly are to help us open our hearts and feel love and be in the moment, you know, because they are so in the moment. They're trying to teach us to be in the moment and slow down. I had a cat. I'm a cat person. I love dogs. I visit my friend's dogs, but my cats that I have right now will not allow a dog on the property. So
I'm thinking because I had two hummingbirds just popping in saying hello. Keep going.
But I had a cat once where I worked. I used to work at a halfway house, and I lived there part-time. My husband and I lived there part-time, and then here at this house part-time. So we'd go back and forth, and Cleo was his name. And whenever I went back over there, and I'd change the sheets to, you know, now we're going to be here for 10 days, so I put clean sheets on the bed. And every time, you know, and I usually get there and I want to unpack my clothes and get stuff ready because I had to move back and forth and get that darn bed made. And every time I would make the bed, he'd dive under the sheets, and I'd, Cleo. I didn't take the time to talk to him. I just was in a hurry.
Exactly.
Yeah, so he would do that, and I'd move him out of the way and make the bed. And then a friend of mine who's also an animal communicator said, he's trying to get you to slow down, relax, and have some joy. He wants you to be happy. He wants you to have joy. Hi, Haley.
The message is delivered. Uh-huh. Haley, I agree with that message, yes.
Yeah, so what Cleo was trying to get me to do was to slow down and play with him. And so then after I finally figured, after I finally knew that, he never did that again. He never jumped in the sheets, under the sheets again. And then when I wanted him to play with me, he was like, no, message delivered. Too late now. I'm just going to go be a cat. But that was a prime example of me not listening and not paying attention.
Well, we're human. You
know, I knew he wanted me to play with him. I just didn't want to take the time to do it and feel that joy. By his physical activity, I knew he did. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and if I would have taken the time to talk to him, I would have known sooner.
This is a good time to take the time because we are cooped in the homes and animals are anxious. So get those balls and start rolling those balls and throwing them. You were talking previously about the animals in the animal kingdom outside, not domesticated. Like the hummingbirds keep interrupting us, and it's the first day when I see two of them together. That hasn't happened. This is a new feeder, and they finally figured out that they can feed here. So we had visitors because of this call, both of them. But what are you hearing? They're popping in. You said you go out in the garden, or they're the birds. I remember some birds have been talking to you. What are they saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, the hummingbirds are wanting us to be joyful and flit flit around and just really notice. They're saying, notice this plant, notice that plant. You know, they're noticing everything that's new in the spring and what's, you know, it's springtime. So it's time to get out and really notice. And also they're talking about being very joyful. And as they really want us to know, as we do go out, when we do go to the grocery store, whatever the things are that we need to do, to make sure that they're asking us to smile with our eyes. If we're wearing our masks, you can't see our smiles. So they're asking us to smile with our eyes and really go out of our way to say hello to each other. The majority of us are not sick. You know, there's few that are, and unfortunately that's happening, but the majority of us are not sick, and the reason that we're staying in is to keep it that way. Yeah. But we can still be joyful with each other. They're asking us to lift our hearts and be joyful. And so when we do our 6 feet, you know, of distance, to say hello, maybe when we wouldn't normally, make eye contact with each other, and acknowledge that we're passing by somebody, but to smile with our eyes.
Yeah.
We feel that way. We don't feel so, they're saying that way we don't feel so secluded and alone. That, you know, we are really, you know, they're talking a lot of the commercials on TV and such are saying, you know, we're in this together. And that's the one way that we really can feel that we are truly in this together. We aren't alone. So, and that's what the hummingbirds are joyfully telling us, to remind us that we are joyful beings. It's okay to let go of fear. To be in the moment and notice what is popping up, notice what's coming in for us, not just the new plants, you know, the spring plants and flowers, but noticing what else is popping up for us. What are the gifts? There's many, many gifts, and that is being in the moment. And what are the gifts?
What are the gifts? You are a gift, my dear. Please tell them to thank them for the message. They are heard. I remember when we were moving from one place to another, of course we talked to Lynn, of course, you know, animals knew what was happening, but my husband had fed the squirrels there and the hummingbirds, and she was very passionate about having the seeds and squirrels. Everyone was fed, and so we were leaving, there was just me and the hummingbirds, and we had that conversation with Lynn, we need to say goodbye to them. And Lynn was saying, you know, what was the restaurant was open? What was it that the hummingbirds were saying? They knew that this was a great restaurant.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Whatever the restaurant was the feeder that my husband was always right there for them. And so apparently in their world, the message spread. So you were saying, where we move to another part of town, those hummingbirds will know that the restaurant, it's a good restaurant to go
good
to.
Restaurant, yeah.
It's mm-hmm. funny how it's worded. It's a restaurant, and the restaurant is now open. So,
yep. And the hummingbirds are finding the restaurant, and they know which restaurants are the good ones to go to, because they're always open. In other words, there's always food there.
Always food there. There he is. So,
they just showed me too, Mark with the chef hat on here. I just saw him with the white chef hat. He's the one that fills the feeders. He's the head chef.
He's the one, you guys. Yes, he's sitting right there and eating. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about the animals in the wild. They're aware of where we are, and they're asking for love and heart opening. We talked about our animals with us. Pay attention. Open that heart and see. The blink for the kitty is always a good idea to see if they blink back, because they connect playing mm-hmm. with them. And I'm going to put some resources for healthier foods, avoiding dry foods and all that. And link to Lynn. The journey of us having animals and having somebody like you to facilitate adds a different dimension to our love affair with them. And my life has been so enriched because of your service and your advocacy for them. And so there's also a man, Jackson Galaxy, you can Google him. He's a behaviorist. He has a couple of books also on catification, so you can make your home a happy place for the cats. And I actually reached out to his team because in my dream of dream, I see you and Jackson connecting together one day. You both have this amazing light work that you're doing for cats in particular. But the bottom line is, thank you for inspiring me to create this, What Matters. They matter. We matter to them more than we think. Your advocacy matters a whole lot to a big world out there. So I just wish that your advocacy blooms, that a lot of us learn, and that we can be better for it and better stewards of our animals. Thank you for coming, my dear. I love you.
I love you too.